Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Of Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson, along with your co-host, Dave Bevan, on this Thursday, February the 2nd, and we are excited to be with you today, and we thank you, as always, for listening to this edition of Rebel Rise Live. All right, so all you boys of summer, girls of summer as well, I guess, are pretty darn excited as the Ole Miss baseball team gets things underway tomorrow at Swayze Field against Florida International. And Dave, the SEC preseason coaches polls came out today, and the Rebels aren't thought that highly of by the rest of the coaches in the league. Picked to finish fifth in the SEC West, behind Texas A&M, LSU, Arkansas, and Mississippi State. So Ole Miss not getting a lot of preseason love, ranked 24th in one national poll, and that is it. But the expectations within the clubhouse in Oxford seem to be higher. What's your take on the preseason, slight that the rest of the world may be giving this Ole Miss baseball team?
Well, the preseason ranking predicted to finish fifth in the SEC West, it's not much different than the previous two seasons. Last season, Ole Miss was preseasonally predicted to finish sixth in the SEC West. And the year before that, it was somewhere right around that fifth or sixth prediction, and Ole Miss went on to compete in the College World Series. And last year, you know, they also overseeded the expectations despite losing a lot of talent the previous year when they went to Omaha. Last year they made the NCAA tournament regionals. So, you know, the expectations for the past couple seasons has seemed like, you know, not so high, but, you know, just by looking at Ole Miss's track, you know, they've exceeded those expectations. And it's good to have that vibe, you know, coming out of Oxford, that this team feels like, you know, they can compete at the highest level. I also want to introduce to the show, Michael Cork is on with us now. Michael, what's your take on Ole Miss's preseason's prediction?
It isn't really surprising. Ole Miss sort of disappointed last year going out to they were up and down on the year. And they failed to bring a lot of runners in, which hurt them in tight ball games, and ended up going out to Los Angeles with some hopes that if things fell together that they could certainly take out UCLA. And it turns out they didn't even get the chance to, as they went 0-2 against CSU, Bakersfield, as well as Maryland. And so that sticks in a lot of people's minds. And it's not like the SEC West is, well, even the SEC East, it's not even like that's the Big Ten. There are a lot of good teams in this conference, and any one of the top five in the SEC West, I wouldn't be surprised if they wound up hosting a regional. LSU returns a lot. They're going to be a very good team. Mississippi State, they should be pretty serviceable. Arkansas and Texas A&M, of course, the Aggies got out to that hot start last year. And so there's going to be a lot of competition in the West and a lot of good teams there. So it wasn't really surprising for me to see where they ended up in the coaches' poll, but it would surprise me if that's where they wound up when the regular season ended.
We're going to talk more about baseball in just a second, but I want to tell you, in just a few minutes, joining us here on the Rebel Rise Live podcast will be Ole Miss signee Jerrion Street out of Hewitt Trussville High School over in the state of Alabama. Looking forward to getting Jerrion on the phone and talking to him about what's going on with him right now as he prepares to arrive at the end of May and join the rest of this class here in Oxford, this top-ranked 2016 Ole Miss football recruiting class. So Michael, I want to ask you this about this weekend's rotation. I mean, I know there are high expectations for the weekend starters on the hill for Ole Miss, but a little bit of unknown and a lot of unproven in this three-man rotation that Mike Bianco is going to start the season with.
Yeah, absolutely. Brady Bramlett's really the only one that's proven it at the SEC level. Chad Smith's coming in from junior college. Sean Johnson was only able to pitch one inning last year, a shutout inning against William and Mary, before he had to call it quits. He felt something was a little bit wrong with his delivery, and it turns out he needed Tommy John surgery. And so there is some there's a lot that's unproven there, and there's a little bit to be concerned about when you look at Brady Bramlett had bone spurs removed from his elbow in the offseason. Chad Smith is coming off a torn oblique, and then the aforementioned Tommy John surgery for Sean Johnson. So all of them are coming off of some, you know, pretty serious injuries, and all to their throwing shoulders. And so that part I could see there's some question marks there, and a lot will need to come together for Ole Miss to have a good rotation this year. But the potential is there. They're all very high. Chad Smith has as high of a ceiling as any upperclassman on the pitching staff. He has nasty stuff. Power pitcher, can strike you out with a slider or his changeup or just go up and in with a fastball. And Sean Johnson is imposing presence on the mound. He has some high upside. And then Brady Bramlett has about as high of a floor as you can get. He's so good with his placement and so precise that, you know, he's a reliable Friday starter. So it's certainly a good rotation, but, you know, there are some risks involved with it.
Any concerns at all that there's not a southpaw in that three-man starting pitching rotation for the Rebels this year? All three of those guys right-handers.
Yeah, I spoke with Coach Bianco not too long ago about just that when he was still sort of figuring out the rotation. And I asked him, I said, you know, there's only four lefties that are on the staff total, Wyatt Short, Matt Denny, and then a pair of junior college starters who are in their first year with the program. And what ideally you'd like to see is being able to break that up. If there was a quality lefty that you could throw on Saturday and move Chad Smith to Sunday and sort of not allow other teams to get hot, to get consistent against you, to get good looks, and to get different lineups out there out of the opposition. But and David Parkinson got a good look. He even started one of the final scrimmages. He got a real good look towards the end, but Sean Johnson just beat him out. Coach Bianco, he likes to use a lot of matchups at the plate. He wants to put a righty when a lefty's pitching and vice versa. But he told me he's gone away from trying to do matchups out of the bullpen or in the starting staff. He just wants the best pitchers out there. And so he believes that Smith, Johnson, and Bramlett give him the best chance to win every series. So that's what he's going to go with, his three righties.
Sounds like a law firm, Smith, Johnson, and Bramlett right there with the what the Rebels will throw out there this weekend against a pretty good Florida International team. Interestingly enough, you know, this FIU team did make it to the NCAA Regionals last year, but they had to backdoor their way in. You know, they had a run through the Conference USA tournament as an 8 seed and won it all and got the automatic berth into the NCAAs. They didn't stick around very long, but this is a tournament team that Ole Miss will open with. Michael, you talked a little bit about Sean Johnson and coming off the Tommy John surgery. And, you know, it's not the Tommy John surgery it was in the 1980s or even the early 90s for that matter. Very often you see guys who have this surgery, they come back even better than they were before. Is there an anticipation level surrounding Sean Johnson about what you're going to see, what kind of velocity he's going to have Sunday when he takes the mound?
Yeah, he said that he feels about as good as ever. And he has been throwing the ball well. When he came to Ole Miss last year, he was fresh off a junior college national championship, and he was electric in high school, sort of went under the radar coming out of Durango, Colorado, which is not exactly a hotbed for baseball talent. And so he had high expectations coming to campus, and he was really upset. He's still upset to this day talking about how he only got to throw one inning last year. And he's ready with the fire this year, and he does have some good pop on the ball. I've watched him throw some bullpens as well as some live action, and there are no questions about his velocity going into 2016.
Well, I've been looking at a little stuff this afternoon. It seems like Andy Kennedy's still trying to keep the dream alive, so to speak. Kennedy saying this afternoon that basically he's been on both sides and in the middle of this NCAA equation going down the stretch, and he thinks the Rebels still have a shot. Michael, what's your take on that?
Yeah, Coach Kennedy was he was very positive today in the press conference. He was, you know, the usual joking, jovial Kennedy. He showed up a little late to the presser because he had a Sunday meeting with a seniors-only meeting today, and sort of was calling on them. It's up to you how you're going to end your Ole Miss career, what you want to do with it. And he has a good feeling. He referenced Alabama and said, what was Alabama 2 weeks ago? And this week they're in the NCAA tournament. And there is a lot of optimism that he has, and he brought up valid points with Alabama as well as where Ole Miss stood last year. Ole Miss was dead in the water at about this time last year and sort of rode a hot end to the year. And that team didn't even win a game in the SEC tournament. They fell to South Carolina in the opening round, which sort of felt like it was dooming them in. But they rode a hot end to the year and backed their way into the tournament off a weak bubble. And like I've said a few times, it's a very, very, very weak bubble this year. And there are five games left. Four are against the bottom four of the conference. Three games are on the road. And so there is the feeling that while they can't get any quality wins, they can get some wins down the stretch and get into that 20 or 21 range as they go to Nashville. And they're, regardless, if they go 5-0, That's not a ticket in. It certainly helps their cause immeasurably from where they are now. But they're going to have some work to do in Nashville, and Kennedy knows that. But he said that there's no lack of motivation on the team. There's no discouragement, that these guys are ready to go out and they're ready to try and make a run at it.
Dave, we're expecting Jerrion Street to be calling in and joining the Rebel Rise Live podcast momentarily. And I hope Jerrion is still set to do that, because he's called my phone two or three times since we've been on the air, and of course I'm unable to answer it right now. So he's slated to call in at 5:15. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed that he does. Street, a 6'1", 195-pounder out of Trussville, Alabama, part of this 2016 Ole Miss signing class, rated as the number 37 running back in the nation by the 247 Sports Composite Index. A little bit of fog, if you will, as to whether or not Jerrion Street will play running back at Ole Miss. And we're going to ask him that when he joins us here in a little bit. What the coaching staff's telling him right now in terms of, will he stay at that running back position, or is there a possibility he may perhaps move over to play the stinger position, Dave? As you well know, Ole Miss certainly needs help in the linebacker corps.
Right. It is, as you mentioned, the stinger position is a much-needed, dire need, especially versus running back. The last time we did talk to Jerrion Street, it was during his official visit weekend. Reporting-wise, it was during his official visit weekend to Ole Miss the weekend before National Signing Day. And up to that point, Ole Miss was still, you know, letting him know that it was the running back position. Maybe there's been, you know, clarification now. We'll find out hopefully here in just a couple minutes. But as far as his talent goes, you know, as a prospect coming out of high school, he is, you know, in my opinion, possibly one of the sleepers in this class. He was underrated, in my opinion. He produced tons of yardage for Hewitt Trussville, helping that team to the playoffs in the state of Alabama. Yardage-wise, he recorded somewhere in around 1,500 yards rushing and like 17, 20-something touchdowns. So very highly talented prospect. He was the only prospect to Ole Miss commit to represent Team Alabama in the All-Star game, and he shined in his performance there. So it's going to be interesting to see what his take is heading into, you know, his enrollment.
You know, and that's the storyline, you know, as spring practice rolls around. You don't have a quarterback battle this year. I still don't think you did last year, to be honest with you. I'm not trying to be funny, but I really don't think there ever really was much of a question that Chad Kelly would win that job and be named the starter. But you know you don't have one this year. But what you do have is you have the top-rated quarterback in the country coming in Shea Patterson. It's going to be fun to watch him work against that Landshark defense this spring, which will all be indoors, as we talked about earlier this week. Ole Miss right now has no football field outdoors. Both practice fields have been skinned up, and what they're going to do there is resod one with natural grass, and the other one, a turf field, is going down. And then, of course, the stadium is in a state of disrepair right now, as you got to deconstruct to construct, and they're well on their way to bowling in the north end zone, Claude Hemingway Stadium. So some exciting times. But it's going to be fun to watch. You've got 8 early enrollees. It's going to be fun to watch them all. Shea Patterson, Benito Jones, Charles Wiley, Gabe Angel, Eli Johnson, Greg Eisworth, Dante Evans, Miles Hartsfield, all going to get their first taste of SEC contact on March 1st. Well, they won't go out in full pads the first day, but spring will start for the Rebels on March 1st. No Grove Bowl this year. Again, we'll just have to see what they do in terms of giving the fans a viewing of this football team. But lots of excitement in the air. Dave, have we got Jerry out yet?
Not yet. But to add on to what you said about the you know, the early enrollees, it is going to be exciting to watch them. In my opinion, there are several of these kids that are going to have a good opportunity to possibly receive, you know, some playing time this fall. A lot of potential in this class, and with the early enrollees, and in some cases, some of these position players, they're you know, in a position group that is going to be a dire need come fall.
Yeah, and then you've got 16 more that are going to report at the end of May, first week of June, right around there, and that'll complete the arrival of this recruiting class. And, you know, I don't think there's a man in this class that more pressure is on than offensive tackle Greg Little. I talked with Greg earlier this week. He fully knows the expectations. He knows that everyone's expecting him to come in here and be able to, honestly, the expectations are to replace Laramie Tunsil at left tackle. It may not happen that way, but they definitely need Greg Little to be able to come in and make an impact in his first year in Oxford as a true freshman. I think that's the one true freshman that you really need to be able to make an impact. And then if anybody else contributes early out of this class, I think that's a luxury. But Greg Little, the bullseye is on him. Michael, heading into spring practice, I mean, what are you looking for from an analyzation standpoint? You know, what do you have your eye on this Ole Miss football team this spring?
Two spots where there were some defections to graduation and early declarations for the draft, and that's the offensive line, where you could say that all five starters are gone, but there is a lot of experience and talent returning. And a guy like Alex Givens will start out at left tackle, but there are full expectations that Little will assume that blind spot role eventually. And then you have, you know, Rod Taylor and Jeremy Liggins also at another tackle spot. There's a plethora of talented interior guys like Rawlings and Patterson and Sims, who are going to give Ole Miss a lot of athleticism and talent interior of the line. And then I'll also be looking at the back end of the defense, where they lose a Mike Hilton, they lose a Chief Brown, a lot of talent back there, but they do return Bridges and Webster, the starting corner spots. But the depth, you're not sure what the depth is at corner, and that'll be interesting to see. And the same goes for safety. You have the Moore twins and Tony Connor and C.J. Hampton. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot that's proven on the back end, and it'll be interesting to see the development of some of the young guys back there.
And, of course, on the offensive line, Ole Miss will be going through the spring without Rod Taylor, who had shoulder surgery back in January, and Robert Conyers will miss spring as well. So those are two key cogs right there. But much like last year when the Ole Miss offensive line was so banged up throughout spring, you're going to have low numbers right off the bat this spring as well. And the complexion of that line, as Michael mentioned, Alex Gibbons expected to get a look at left tackle during spring practice, is going to change when fall camp gets here and you've got a fully loaded gun to work with, so to speak. But from what I'm understanding, from left to right on that offensive line, as far as if you want to call it first group heading into the spring, it will be Gibbons at left tackle, Javon Patterson at left guard, Sean Rawlings at center, Jordan Sims at right guard, and Jeremy Liggins at right tackle. That's what I'm hearing at this point. Of course, what does that mean or matter? Nothing, absolutely nothing, but that's kind of what you're looking at with spring getting fired up, and we'll see what all happens. So, Dave, I'm assuming Jerrion has not joined us.
Not yet.
Okay, well, we like I said, he was calling me profusely once we started the show, and I got a feeling it was something come up and he wasn't going to be able to do it. So if he joins us by the time we sign off, great. If not, then we'll catch him next time. That much we know for sure. So it comes out yesterday that Ole Miss, and actually we already knew this about a month ago, we knew Ole Miss and Baylor were in talks about playing each other in 2020. It comes out yesterday that they have reached a verbal agreement. Paperwork just needs to be signed, and Ole Miss and Baylor will open the 2020 season in Houston, Texas, another one of those quote-unquote neutral site games to start off the season. Dave, what's your thought on that? Because the Rebels have to go to Orlando, Florida this year to play Florida State in a quote-unquote neutral site game, which it's really not a neutral site game. Florida State, Orlando, there are going to be a lot of Seminoles in that stadium no matter how well Ole Miss fans travel.
Well, what I like about Ole Miss scheduling is, you know, the opening to the season, they are really finding some very talented teams, very known talented teams to, compete in the non-conference schedule. Obviously, Florida State, that's going to be a much easier game to possibly predict than 2020 against Baylor, because, I mean, right now you don't know how those two teams are going to shape up, you know, heading into that season. But Baylor, obviously a very known Big 12 team, and, you know, it just fully represents it, as mentioned by this Ole Miss staff before, is, you know, building that Ole Miss brand. And Ole Miss is, you know, continuously building that brand next season. And I believe they share a home-and-home versus California. So that's also going to be another interesting non-conference schedule starting that 2017-2018 schedule, where they'll share a home-and-home matchup in those two seasons. So it's very interesting, and it's good to see, you know, those Ole Miss finding good quality opponents for their non-conference schedule. And what it does is it strengthens, you know, Ole Miss's strength of schedule. I was looking at the FPI index on ESPN. Ole Miss currently has the number three hardest strength of schedule in the entire nation, behind Alabama. I can't remember the other team right offhand, but you know, that just shows. I mean, 2016 schedule, you're opening with Florida, and in the first 4 weeks, you're three out of those four games, you're playing Florida State, Georgia, and Alabama. So it's going to be a very tough schedule.
Strength of schedule in football, blah blah blah. If you play in the SEC, strength of schedule, so what? Now, of course, the SEC has mandated that their schools begin playing at least one non-conference Power 5 opponent every year. That's why you're starting to see all of this stuff. But I'm going to tell you, if you play in the SEC West and anybody questions your strength of schedule, they're crazy. I don't worry about that strength of schedule. What Florida State does to Ole Miss's strength of schedule, Lord have mercy. I mean, you know, once you're – it's kind of like once you're rich, you're rich. Doesn't matter if you have $1 billion or $2 billion. If you play in the SEC West, your schedule's tough. It doesn't matter who you play outside of your league, so to speak.
Well, obviously, you know, the strength of schedule, it fluctuates, you know, throughout the season. And that's because you don't know how these teams are going to perform, you know, preseason-wise. And Georgia, you know, just for an example, I mean, Georgia's coming in with a new coaching staff. So that would be the biggest thing to look at, you know, by week three, how is Georgia going to look? So, or week three, week four. So that was the point I was wanting to make. It fluctuates, of course, throughout the season.
And can I say something about these neutral site games?
Go for it.
Go ahead.
I understand that it's great that there's a big Ole Miss alumni base in it. There's a big one in Houston where the Baylor game will be played. The alumni in Florida don't get to see the team so often, so Orlando's sort of a central base there. And I understand that, you know, metro areas of big southern cities are recruiting hotbeds when you look at the high school football surrounding Atlanta and surrounding Houston and so forth. But I am so tired of these games. They're horrible to watch, these neutral site games. I mean, there's just no atmosphere. I would much rather see a home and home. And it's just every year you see, oh, Louisville and Auburn are playing in Atlanta, or Alabama and Wisconsin are playing in Houston. And it's just a bad watch. Watching Alabama go to the Big House to play Michigan would interest me so much more. Watching Ole Miss go to Waco and have Baylor come into town, that would be so much better for college football, in my opinion, and just add more to those games. It's just like a stagnant atmosphere there.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll go back to the Ole Miss-Texas series. Even though Ole Miss was skull-drugged when Texas came to Oxford, it added so much to the atmosphere of that game. And I tell you, I stood all night on the sidelines next to Bevo, and I learned a lot. Let me tell you something. I learned a lot. Bevo is one of the greatest traditions in college football, whether you like the Texas Longhorns or not. But I learned a lot. And I learned that you really don't want to stand next to Bevo because Bevo's dangerous. You know, there's a trainer over there, and he's ready to take Bevo out if Bevo goes psycho in front of the cheerleaders and everything. The smell is horrendous because Bevo's doing his thing all game long, but they do bring a nice tarp in that Bevo stands on, so to not stain the turf, I suppose. But I learned a lot about Texas football and the tradition and everything. And I think you've got a valid point. It kind of dumbs down the pageantry and even the emotion to an extent when you have those preseason games like that. They're made for television, Michael, and you know, everybody gets excited at home to watch the Alabama-Wisconsin matchup, and the ratings are going to be good. They're not made for an in-person experience, I don't think. I think you're exactly right on that. Money drives the train, so I wouldn't expect that to change. But if you're an Ole Miss fan, you do have to be excited about opening up against Florida State, because when do you do that? When have you done that as Ole Miss in the modern era? You know, you played Boise State out there, but when have you done that? And I mean, it's going to put your football program, which everybody in the country is talking about right now, for good or bad, right in prime time, in the national spotlight. And if you win it, it's a rocket ship to what that 2016 season can be. If you lose it, well, you got to go back home and get ready to play Wofford and Alabama and Georgia in back-to-back-to-back weeks. So, it's a good litmus test for the Ole Miss Rebels to open up the 2016 season. And it's also, you know, we don't talk much about this, but it can be the platform in which Chad Kelly can launch his Heisman Trophy campaign. Because if he has a big night against the Seminoles, Ole Miss has got to win. Doesn't matter how many Chad Kelly throws for if the Rebels lose. But if Ole Miss knocks off Florida State in Orlando on Labor Day night on primetime television and Chad Kelly has a big game, Chad Kelly is going to be the flavor of the day. Agree or disagree with that, Dave?
I agree. And you mentioned, you know, if Ole Miss can knock off Florida State, then they come back home for their non-conference game against Wakeford and then Alabama the week after that in Oxford. I just don't see how any other way, if that scenario happens where Ole Miss heads in 2-0 against Alabama, Alabama likely heading 2-0 against that matchup. Ole Miss has won the last two games of the series. You know, the conversation brings up is brought up every year. It's happened once, and that happened the last time the rivalry came back to Oxford. I just don't see another way how College Game Day would not be in Oxford, because both teams would likely in that scenario be top 10 teams heading into that matchup. And like you said, you know, once again, that prime time stage of Ole Miss continuing to build its brand and Kelly, you know, possibly, you know, building that Heisman resume.
I think if what Dave is describing comes to fruition, that Ole Miss knocks off Florida State and then puts up 74 on Wofford, I think that's Alabama's worst nightmare come the third weekend in September. To have to come to Oxford, and Dave's exactly right. I mean, you know, the ESPN Game Day crew will be here. It will be ground zero for college football on that particular Saturday. They've lost to Ole Miss 2 years in a row. Hugh Freeze seems to have Nick Saban's number. I think that is the nightmare scenario for Alabama, to have to come to Oxford on week three with a 2-0 Ole Miss team ranked in the top 10 that has proven they're pretty darn good, because by then they would have beaten Florida State. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's. I think if there's one team that's happy about it, it's got to be Georgia. I mean, teams that the week after they play Alabama, I forget what the stat is, but teams get beat up by the Crimson Tide every single year. It goes back to Bear Bryant. He says if a team doesn't lose the week after playing us, then we didn't do it right. And if you're Georgia, and you could get, you know, a marquee win. Say Ole Miss beats Florida State. I don't think there's anyone that thinks that Wofford stands a chance. I don't think the Terriers are that tenacious of a bunch. But then you have Alabama. Ole Miss is sitting at 3-0 with wins over Florida State and Alabama and a Heisman Trophy front runner and Chad Kelly. They're obviously going to be, you know, somewhere in the top five. And then Georgia's going to come to town to Oxford, and they're going to have a team that has already had to get up for the season opener with a very talented, very physical Florida State team. They had to play another college football game, and then they have Alabama. With how emotional that game's going to be, how much investment's going to be there, you know, Ole Miss tries to go for three in a row. And then not only the emotional investments those first 3 weeks, but also the physical toll that could take and getting battered and bruised in those games. And then you have Georgia, who that could be a marquee win for Kirby Smart. They're not going to get the best of Ole Miss that week. And Ole Miss will have as good of a chance to beat Georgia as they're going to get, considering, you know, it's a new system. Georgia's either going to be playing a freshman quarterback or someone who's, you know, he's maybe a poor man's Brandon Allen and Grayson Lambert. I don't know if that's fair or not, but not a great quarterback situation at UGA coming into this year. And that Alabama game, it's going to be incredibly charged up. And I don't think Nick Saban likes someone getting the best of him, much less getting the best of him 2 years in a row. And Alabama, that score was not indicative of what that game was. If someone was in a coma for the last year and came out and said, oh, Ole Miss beat Alabama by 6 in Tuscaloosa, it must have been a close game. That wasn't. That was a beatdown.
No,
that was a 4-point game with 10 minutes to go.
Those people were leaving the stadium in the third quarter. I remember looking up at the scoreboard and I was going, Ole Miss is beating Alabama in Tuscaloosa 31-10 in the third quarter. It was 31-10. But, you know, we're talking about those first four games on the Ole Miss schedule, and here's something to pay attention to that really nobody's talking about right now. Preparing a football team, as we have seen, is a very delicate process, okay? You're opening up your season on a Monday night. You're playing Florida State. Win, lose, or draw, you're getting on the plane, flying back to Oxford. You got to go to class Tuesday. At some point, you've got to rest somewhere along the line, and you've got a football game to play Saturday. And granted, it's a 1AA team, but your preparation schedule is all out of whack. And then as soon as you get that Saturday game that you've had, 3 days to prepare for, really, 2.5 days to prepare for, it's Alabama week. So keep an eye on that. I think that could how the Rebels handle that, it could be a tripwire because you're out of your routine. You know, the season starts and there is no routine, so to speak. And that's a potential downfall for playing that game on a Monday night. Understand, you know, TV rules the roost, so to speak. You've got to do what TV wants you to do, but that's something I think to keep an eye on. I mean, Dave, do you think that could be a factor? I mean, you know, the Rebels flying back, getting in the wee hours of Tuesday morning. You've got class to go to. You got practice that night. When are you going to rest following that game as you start to prepare for Saturday's opponent in Wofford?
You're right. I mean, you put it to a good point. It's going to be hard for them to very little time to prepare, like you add. One thing that I wanted to go back and talk about, Michael made a really good point about Georgia. And, you know, it just got me thinking there for a minute. The way that it's set up, if Ole Miss were to come in into the first 3 weeks of the season, like we mentioned, if everything just falls into Ole Miss's place with, you know, knocking off Florida State, then, you know, Alabama starting the season 3-0, Georgia comes to town, you know, a new team almost reminds me of, you know, Florida last year, you know, under a new coaching staff. It depends on how Georgia comes into that week four, but, you know, they're going to come in, you know, with nothing to lose in their mindset, in my opinion. And if Ole Miss is 3-0 at that point, like you mentioned, David, they're going to be a top five team, you know, without a doubt in the national polls, just like how Ole Miss was against Florida last year. And like Michael said, you know, history shows after playing Alabama that following week, it's hard to recover. And Ole Miss, it took them two weeks. You know, more than 2 weeks to finally, it just seemed to get off of those, you know, recovering of after that game against Alabama. So, you know, that's going to be, you know, one to watch as well, that particular game, to see how everything shapes up heading into week four.
Well, and then you've got to hope that you get across the finish line to start the season on September the 5th, totally healthy, and that you don't have any losses coming out of fall camp. You just shudder when you think about that, but every year it seems like you lose somebody during fall camp. And that's taken a route to have coaches. They don't do as much contact as what you used to do in fall camp anymore because, I mean, you're killing yourself. And I don't think Nick Saban does a lot of it in Alabama, and Hugh Freeze doesn't do a lot of it at Ole Miss. And you know, you would think, hey, football, you got to get out there and you got to inflict pain on each other every day. But that's really, really not the wisest thing to do because you got to stay healthy and get to the game with your legs and limbs all intact. So September 5th season opener, man, guys. Seems like we just closed this season, but it's a lot of fun looking forward to what may be in store for this Ole Miss football team. You're looking at these way too early preseason polls. Ole Miss perennially in the top 15 pretty much with everybody, and I think that's a good starting point for the Rebels. And I tell you what, though, you're going to know what they're all about early in the month of September. I promise you that. With Florida State, Alabama, and Georgia, I mean, I don't know guys, and maybe one of you guys can think of a September more challenging than the one Ole Miss has ahead of them this fall. You know, thank goodness it's Wofford you're playing and not Memphis in that non-conference spot in the month of September. But, man, the Seminoles, the Crimson Tide, and the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, yeah, you're going to know what you're all about before October hits the calendar.
Not in my, you know, remembrance. Do I remember a schedule, you know, that showing, you know, that kind of toughness and heading in, you know, preseason-wise. And really, it's just due to the fact, you know, with the Ole Miss's coaching staff and, you know, Ross Bjork coming in and setting up, you know, these non-conference games against high-quality opponents such as Florida State. You know, in the past, it just seemed the non-conference schedule, like you started the season with a couple, you know, freebies in there. And, you know, Florida State's going to be a challenging opponent right off the bat. And like you mentioned, David, after the week four, you're really going to know how good this Ole Miss football team is.
Let's do a little lightning round here, and we're going to do predictions, guys. Well, one prediction from you, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be football, baseball, basketball, your choice. One prediction from you for something that's going to happen in this 2016 year. Michael, go.
I guess if I was going to have to pinpoint one thing, I'd have to go with I think Ole Miss is going to host a Super Regional in 2016.
Ooh, there you go. That a way to build expectations up right there. the fan base is going to hold you to that one, Michael. Michael,
I know. I'm going to be living or dying on that one.
Oxford Super Regional is going to be a wild weekend. I can feel it already. All right, Dave, your prediction for 2016.
Ooh, I've got a good one as well, David, and possibly, you know, the fans are going to hold me to this one as well. You know, heading into this game, Ole Miss is I just feel right now my gut feeling is saying Ole Miss is going to come into it with high momentum like they have the past 2 years. I think Ole Miss is going to upset Alabama for a third straight season.
Wow. Are you hearing here first? Dave Bevan calling his shot. The Rebels knock off the Crimson Tide on September the 19th in Oxford. Okay, mine's got to deal with the same thing. Ole Miss will shatter its single-game attendance record on September the 19th when Alabama rolls into Oxford to play a 2-0 Rebel football team. And you hear what I said, 2-0. So I'm making two predictions right there, actually three. Ole Miss is going to beat Florida State in Orlando. And Ole Miss is going to beat Wofford. And more people to have ever witnessed a football game in Oxford, Mississippi, will watch Alabama and Ole Miss play on September the 19th at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, a newly renovated Vaught-Hemingway Stadium that will seat more than it ever has before. I'll give you that. But it'll seat more the weekend before, too, when Wofford comes to town. But the Alabama crowd will be the most to ever watch a football game in Oxford, Mississippi. And the nation will watch it, too. As we talked about, I'll bet you my bottom dollar ESPN's game day will be in Oxford, Mississippi, in the Grove. Of course, they'll show their obligatory shot of the courthouse. Have you guys ever noticed that? ESPN cannot televise anything from Oxford without showing a shot of the courthouse. And they love the night shot when it's basketball. I guess they just send the cameraman down there and go, hey, we'll cut to you in a little bit. You stand out there on the sidewalk. You know? Have you guys ever noticed that?
Last time they showed a establishing shot of the courthouse, I'm pretty sure I saw you, David, walking down the steps in cuffs. Now, is that right, or did I see someone else?
That was correct. That was the night that I had drank too much sweet tea, and I was trying to get on the ESPN broadcast, and mm-hmm. I was successful mm-hmm. in doing so. I was wrongly accused, however, at the Sugar Bowl of when Laramie Tunsil scored his touchdown of throwing a camera down in the end zone and dancing. and that did not happen. But somebody on the board accused me of that, and that was not me, and it wasn't me certainly walking down the street in handcuffs either. But a good natured jab from Michael. Dave, here we go. If you had to pick the Oxford, Mississippi landmark, Dave, that ESPN showed 25 shots of every broadcast, and it couldn't be the courthouse, what would it be?
Well, I mean, I'm just going to go with the most obvious is, in my opinion, what is the image of Ole Miss, and that's the Walk of Champions.
For a basketball game, though?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the courthouse is to me that it is an image of Ole Miss as
Michael,
well. I mean,
Dave,
Michael,
I got a feeling you got to quit the answer, Michael.
Absolutely, it's got to be just a big shot out front of the pizza den, and I'll even volunteer to be eating a Stromboli right out front.
I like it. They could get kind of down the street in the old Hostess Bakery outlet store parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and shoot down to the pizza den. Is the pizza den
perfect.
Still open? Is that still open?
Oh, yeah. I go every week. Every week I go
Ooh,
get a Stromboli.
Man, I love their pizza. Yeah, Strombolis are good, too. And the oh, my goodness. Any of you who aren't from Oxford who have never patronized the pizza den, and we need to send them a bill for this, Michael. Yeah, you guys should go. It is absolutely the best pizza in town. My apologies to anybody who disagrees, but man, it's just that kind of pizza where it's like eating a salad on top of your pizza. There's so many olives and bacon and you know, I get everything. It's just absolutely incredible. The Pizza Den, I like that. I like that. I think that is awesome.
My kind of place.
LB's Meat Market. That would be a good shot,
mm-hmm.
right there, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're getting silly now. Recapping the show, Jerry on Street, AWOL on us. And to his credit now, he was blowing my phone up, probably with a good excuse of why he could not call in at 5:15 like he was supposed to. We'll effort to get Jerry on a future podcast, and we'll make sure that we do indeed do that. Guys, one other thing we want to talk about, I think, before we close this one down, it is the topical thing right now, and that is the NCAA investigation into the Ole Miss athletic program. There are a lot of facts out there. There are a lot of things that are being sold as facts right now that may or may not be facts. I think everything you're going to know about this is already out there. All the stories have been broken. Now it's all about Ole Miss responding within their 90-day window, which I understand they're going to take the full 90 simply because they're not in control of all the responses that are going to be filed on this. There are other parties involved, so 90 days looks like they may take it all. The bottom line on all of this, it very much looks like this is not going to be resolved with any finality until the fall. And, you know, I think we just owe it to our listeners and to our subscribers to weigh in on that. We know that is a very serious situation for you all and that you all are very concerned about it. Again, you know, talking to everybody that can talk about it with any level of authority off the record, the ramifications of this are, you know, let's talk about it in weather terms. Where you would have a hurricane, a tornado, a thunderstorm, and a breeze. It's being told to me that the ramifications of this as far as how it will affect football be more like a March breeze. So, you know, that's the million-dollar question. That's what we're all waiting to see. And, you know, it's certainly a serious matter. Don't mean to downplay it whatsoever. Anytime the NCAA is looking into your program. But I think your administration at Ole Miss is well in control of what their message back to the NCAA is, and I think everything at the end of the day, it's going to be more of a hiccup than a heart attack, if that makes any sense. Michael, Dave, agree, disagree, please weigh in.
I'll let Michael start first.
I think that someone needs to give Ross Bjork some type of NyQuil or something of the sort, because he's getting less sleep than Dan Mullen right now. I saw him at the baseball presser the other day. He looked a little worn out.
Well, I agree, David. You know, from everything that we're hearing, it is going to be, you know, a mild breeze, as you best put it, you know, as far as the ramifications on football. And like you mentioned, I think, you know, all the big stories are out on this. You're not going to hear much of it until Ole Miss, you know, answers. And like I've mentioned in previous podcasts, you know, the biggest thing now is to see Ole Miss's response. And that's really the next step of this process. And we've mentioned before the timeline on that. You're looking, you know, in that 90-day window, you're looking somewhere from in between now and mid-April, you know, before Ole Miss, you know, has that response. If Ole Miss and the NCAA can't agree on terms, then the NCAA has 60 days to respond back to Ole Miss. So, you know, that's where we're at on everything. And there's really not much as far as, you know, more to talk about it until, in my opinion, you know, you hear, you know, Ole Miss's response for it. And of course, like you said, you know, there's stuff thrown out there that are facts, and then there's some stuff that are perceived as facts that don't know, you know, the quality of that source of whether those are facts or not.
Well, I think that pretty much sums it up right there. And, you know, sunshine is the best disinfectant. It will all come out. It's inevitable that will happen. But, again, unless we're just being flat-out lied to, it's not going to be a derailing situation for all the good work that Hugh Freeze and his staff has put together in the last 4 years. And it really is amazing. Those of us that have been covering this football team and covered this football team prior to the arrival of Hugh Freeze, how badly broken the Ole Miss football program was the last two seasons under Houston Nutt, and got progressively worse with each passing week. And that 2-10 season was no joy to cover whatsoever. And I can remember towards the tail end of the season, guys, I was covering Ole Miss and Louisiana Tech. Sonny Dykes had brought his Louisiana Tech Bulldogs in to play Ole Miss. I looked up at the scoreboard, and it was 27-7, 27-6, something like that, about 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And I really believe there were less than 3,000 people inside Vaught Hemingway Stadium to watch that football team play. And there wasn't that many to begin with, to be honest with you. Probably a crowd of 18,000. I don't know what the announced attendance was. But to think of how far this Ole Miss football team has come in such a short period of time, that your football team is now relevant in the national conversation, is absolutely amazing. Because I don't care what you thought Hugh Freeze was going to do when he got here, you couldn't have thought he would have done this so quickly. So as you're getting frustrated and anxious about this NCAA investigation, I would simply encourage you to focus on the positives and cling to that belief that those things are not going away. Regardless of what somebody reports or how they twist it up, the word on the ground in Oxford is that this football program will survive this strongly. That's going to do it for us today on this edition of Rebel Rise Live. Michael, Dave, certainly thank you for being a part of this podcast. And thank you, the subscriber, the listener, for making us a part of your day. We do not take that lightly. We thank you with much gratitude that you are part of our family at Rebels 247 and that you give us the opportunity to serve you. So for Michael Quirk, Dave Bevan, I'm David Johnson for 247 Sports. As always, hotty toddy.